From Aspen Public Radio, this is Curated, stories on the art and the artists who visit and live in the Roaring Fork Valley. I'm Claire Woodcock, arts and culture reporter here at Aspen Public Radio. It is Wednesday, July 12th, and the Aspen Music Festival and School is just days away from the opening of its season's first operatic production, Giuseppe Verdi's La Traviata at the Wheeler Opera House. In the early 80s, the Aspen Music Festival and School donated $250,000 to the city of Aspen to restore and revamp the Wheeler into the venue as it stands today. That's what Jenna Bueller says. She's the Opera House's executive director. The contract sits in her office.
Funny, I have it in my office. It's on old school, like, legal paper that was written on a typewriter. It's all yellowed and, you know, definitely aging. But basically, in 1984, the city and the music festival and school decided that this would be an ongoing, very long-term agreement.
It's a 50-year contract with points for reviewing, the last term of the agreement having been renewed this year. So in 2034, the folks running these institutions will have to decide if this is a relationship that continues. For Bueller, the summer opera serves as a great homage to the Wheeler's history.
And I think it's one of the best spaces to see an opera in, to be that close in to the sets and the costumes and the singers. It's a lot different of experience than if you're, you know, up in the rafters, if you're seeing an opera in New York or some of the other bigger houses across the country.
On this week's episode, we're going to pull the curtain back on what it takes to stage and perform an opera in this historic space. Peep into the Wheeler as if it were a dollhouse. From the designers, to the technicians, to the director and young performers, it takes a lot to produce an opera. So thanks for tuning in, and stay with me. Edward Berkeley is director of the Aspen Opera Center, as well as the Juilliard School's director of undergraduate opera studies. He's been with the Aspen Music Festival and School for well over three decades. For him, La Traviata was an appealing choice to open the summer season with, not just because of how we thought the story would play with audiences,
but also that are good for students and younger singers to work on and to grow with. It's a real educational opera.
The vision begins with director Berkeley and set designer John Casarda. Casarda says that first he reads the script.
Or the libretto if one is doing an opera or a musical, and of course the music is a very, very important component. And becoming familiar with the needs of the script, the needs of the libretto, from both a practical and mechanical point of view, as well as an artistic one, creative one, which can be very difficult to define, the kind of atmosphere and aura that you want to create. And then it moves on to conversations with the director, which is very, very important. You're there actually to serve, in a sense, the director, or to kind of co-create the production. And then it's doodles, really. Everything starts kind of with doodles, just organized scribbles on paper, and you sort out ideas. You begin to look at research, which can be books or things that come offline, which is really helpful these days.
At the heart of all operas is a story, which can transcend language barriers and time, often depicting universal themes like love and loss. Berkeley says this opera in particular orbits around this character of La Traviata herself, Violetta.
I mean, she is a woman who's practicing as a courtesan in Paris and is going through a moment when she's been unhealthy and she doesn't know what's going to happen. Physically, what's going to happen to her. And turns out that she has probably tuberculosis. And she falls in love. She meets a younger tenor, and she falls in love with him. And so the story becomes about, it develops into whether they can stay together or if, in fact, they're going to have to separate. I mean, because she's sick, but also because his father wants to break them up.
After the set designer refines his sketches, he moves on to the model, which Dylan Kind, the Aspen Music Festival and School's summer technical director, picks up. He's working on three-dimensionalizing the model from the wings of the Wheeler's stage.
One of the things that I picked up from my time at grad school is how to 3D model things. Which really helps when you have something this complicated with so many holes that need to line up a certain way. It helps to draw it out in 3D to make sure things are going to fit in the computer before you start actually building them and spending money on materials and stuff like that.
Kind is working from his laptop on AutoCAD software, which he says gives him more accuracy.
Yeah, and then we print out these build drawings that have that are dimensioned, and this is what you give to your shop so that they can accurately build what you've drawn. Okay. And it, you know, you scale it down so it fits on a piece of paper and stuff like that, and then, you know, it goes through and gets built, and then, you know, goes to the painter, and then it comes on here.
The crew backstage is working on the set's balcony, getting the stairs and safety handrails up for the performers' security. When building, Kine says the crew often encounters little errors that need to be fixed before the show.
The hole is a little bit off-center, you know, a 16th, which throws off the bolt that you're planning on using. So it's those kinds of things that really come to pass at about this point when you're loading it in. You're like, well, now this thing doesn't fit together. Here's what we're going to do to change it so that it will fit.
Mary Bodison is the opera's production manager. She has 30 years of backstage experience under her belt, with this being her first summer in Aspen.
In the middle of load-in, which happens over a series of about 6 days, as pieces of scenery are ready, they can come in and then we'll load them in. And so you can see we've got the floor already installed. It was pre-painted over at our paint shop, which we are hosted by the middle school.
Okay, so you didn't paint the actual floor.
Correct. We actually painted an entire series of 4x8 sheets of masonites to simulate the floor, and then it loads in here like a large jigsaw puzzle and gets screwed down to the deck. In that way, it can get painted off-site in a calm, clean place, then brought over here, and then touched up again before show.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and then we have a secondary deck that'll get painted for the next show. So again, the painter can be working on that show while this show is on the stage.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so that's kind of what we're doing.
How many singers are gonna have to stand on that?
What do you think? We have a chorus of 30, about 30? Yeah, so it needs to be very structural, which is why it's all steel framed as opposed to wood framed.
Okay, so much math must be going into this.
Yeah, there's a lot of math, and that is why it's a little different. When I came through school, we were doing a lot of things straight in wood, and we had some structural stuff, but nowadays, in the last 20, 30 years, a lot of scenery is steel. You'll see on Broadway, they've got a lot of mechanical dynamics, things where things are computer controlled and movement. So the technical directors coming out of grad school nowadays have a lot different information. So they're actually getting engineering information as well.
So how did you get into this line of work?
So I actually went to school for engineering. I started ahead after a few years of engineering. I had realized that I was spending more time at the theater. So I literally had seen an advertisement for a theatrical actor, singers, dancers needed. And so I walked in for a dance audition and they asked me to read. And I was terrible. And I loved the process of load-in that we all got to help with. And so then I just started digging from there and taking more and more and more theater classes and more in every field. And I couldn't make up my mind. I loved building sets. I loved painting sets. I loved doing props. I loved doing wardrobe. And so I ended up as a production manager.
You're able to wear a lot of hats.
I wear a lot of hats. I wear them just enough to try to keep everything flowing. The nice part is that we have a really amazing team of people, and they really know what they're doing. And so for me, it's just trying to get them what they need to be able to do their jobs as fast as I can. It's also allowing them to do what they know how to do, and then backing them up when something might have a hiccup, and having some resources. And it's definitely more management than it is telling them how to do their individual tech jobs, because I'm not going to tell a costume shop manager how to, you know, stitch a gown. That's not my thing.
Sure.
But I will help her negotiate a contract with a rental house. I will help her wrangle the deliveries and get the boxes where they need to be when, and I will make sure that her load-in is timed so that it works for her dress rehearsal. You know, things like that. So I'm more in a support. So I tend to think of a production manager as enabling those other departments to do their jobs.
That was Mary Bodison, the opera's production manager. She says, the Aspen Music Festival has also taken over the Aspen School District, turning classrooms into scene, costume, prop, and paint shops, as well as rehearsal spaces. Bodison takes me over to the campus with her dog Percy to check out the various pop-up shops. The school cafeteria is now a paint shop. The floor is covered in old carpeting with pieces of scenery lying everywhere. Jill Fives is the Aspen Music Festival and School's scenic artist. Can you tell me what you're working on right now?
Right now, I'm working on a scrim that is going to be used on stage right. Scrim is a mesh-like material that we use in theater to create an illusion with, if we light it from the front, then it becomes a more opaque image. When we backlight it, as you could see, which they can't see, but you would be able to see scenes behind that. So it's a tool used in lighting to create illusions on stage.
So what are some of the techniques that you're using right now?
The hardest part of painting scrim is, as you can see right here, is we're not on TV, but you have to make sure that the holes do not fill up. Right. Otherwise, it will ruin the illusion. So it's... the paint has to be a certain consistency so that either if it's too wet, it'll fill the holes, and if it's too thick, it'll fill the holes. And I'm technically just scrubbing with my brush to try and make the holes open up. And normally I would have like an air source, which I sort of do here, but I broke my finger on it. See like how that's all filled up? I have to wait until it sets up a hair and then try and work that out.
And that's usually just by blending.
It's just by scrubbing, mainly with try to dry your brush out a hair, and then just try and just slowly pick the paint up and get it out of the holes.
That was Jill Fives, one of dozens of folks working to make this production happen. She says she relies heavily on the lights opening night to accentuate the paint job. Lloyd Sobel is the lighting designer. He spoke with me backstage at the Wheeler in a dressing room as he sorts through the colors he's going to put into the different lighting instruments.
I've already did a light plot for the show, and that's been hung, and it's now ready to focus. But before I finish focusing, I have to put color in the different lighting instruments. So that's what I'm preparing for tomorrow, plus templates of things like projections and things like that. And tomorrow we actually begin to focus because we start writing cues on Sunday. And we have to be ready for the opera opening. I have to look at the set and what color that is because I don't want to turn something to mud. So I have to be careful I choose the right colors. Plus costumes are a big issue. So I have to amplify the costumes and make sure I don't do something that's to negate the color of the costumes.
So how much trial and error goes into this?
Although sometimes I'll take something on the set, like the rose on the set, and I'll try to experiment a little bit and see what works best. But I have a pretty good idea. Well, I have an assistant who runs the light board, and he does all the programming while Ed and I sit in the house and kind of write the cues. We have singers walk the stage so we know where it has to be lit and so on. And once the show opens, he's pressing the go button on the computer. It's really all computer-based now. It didn't used to be. You used to do it by hand, and every light or group of lights you could control manually. But now it's so computerized that you can have one light coming up in 10 seconds while another light is going down in 30 seconds, while something else, a sunset, is happening over an hour. I mean, it can be very complex. So it's not really easier. It's just you have a better option of ways to control light. The main thing is that it's very consistent, because when you used to do it by hand, for whatever reason, you could make mistakes, the timing could change, and so on. But now, because it's so clocked in, that if you want something to happen in a specific time and it's called correctly, it doesn't change. So it's really more efficient in the long run.
Lloyd Sobel, the Aspen Music Festival and School's lighting designer for the production La Traviata, had to get back to rehearsal, but his assistant Andy Hillman is the master electrician with the opera. He takes me up to the lighting booth.
So you know your way around the booth pretty well?
It's a learning experience. This one is really interesting because it's such an odd mix of old and new. So it's still kind of taking some getting used to learn, like, you know, what they do the old ways, what they do relatively recently.
Yeah, what do you mean by that?
A lot of the equipment. There's like the lighting console they have was released probably in like 2010, and some of the equipment that they're using to control the console to control was released in the 60s. So just making sure everything works together and kind of wants to play is really interesting. Right now we're in the lighting booth, the control booth. Over here we have video titles, and over here we have lighting. This is our lighting console. It's an ETC Geo, and it basically this is the thing that tells everything that's automated on stage what to do. So it can control lighting, it can control special effects. Sometimes I've seen him control sound, but not really as often.
This looks pretty computerized.
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of lighting nowadays is super mixed with computers because, you know, we use computers inside of a lot of our lights to do different effects. We have some lights that are on stage. We only have two of them in this show, but they're lights that can move any direction. They can change color. They're basically the type of lights that you would see at any type of concert or anything like that. And this board is basically built to handle all of those things. Basically, everything that you look at on here controls an attribute of a light, which is just something that it can do.
So people that were doing lighting like 40 years ago have had to learn a whole different trade, essentially.
Absolutely. Like, especially with all the way the technology has kind of blown up over the past couple decades, lighting has been one of those things that's surprisingly right on the forefront of that, because we're able to use so many little machines and little things from other industries and bring them into our own to make them use, to make them work and provide a cooler lighting show.
This stuff is fascinating.
Oh, yeah.
All the behind-the-scenes stuff.
I love it. Yeah. I always wanted to be a rock star growing up, and I knew that wasn't going to happen, so the closest I could do it was to be on the other side of the stage.
That was Andy Hillman, master electrician with the Aspen Music Festival and School, who assists lighting designer Lloyd Sobel. You're listening to Curated on Aspen Public Radio, and today we're going behind the scenes to learn more about the Wheeler Opera House's summer activity. It's one thing to design and build the set of an opera, but it doesn't just get technical with saws and paint. Opera director Edward Berkeley says that performing in the space is another technical endeavor. But first, he has to break down some of the scenes. Are there any scenes in particular that like stick out to you?
I mean, there's the first time that Violetta, who's the Traviata herself, and Alfredo, when they meet, there's an extraordinary toasting song that's very, very famous called Libiamo, and referred to as the Brindisi. And it's a remarkable scene because you see them discovering each other and she definitely, and he as well, falling in love and realizing that this could be something major for their lives.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a pretty major scene. The other scene that's I think fantastic is the second scene of the second act, which is a big party scene when there's a confrontation between. This is after Violetta has left Alfredo.
Tell me about what excites you about this opera, putting this opera on this summer, and some of the challenges that have come with it.
I mean, one of the great things of working on it is that the music itself is so powerful and tells the story so well that really, once the singers know the music and they're exciting to work with, once they really know the music, it's there. The way Verdi wrote the opera, it is absolutely there. And that makes it fun to work on, because some operas you work on, you feel like the text itself has to carry a lot of the opera. When you're working on Verdi, pretty consistently, Verdi is a great storyteller. And so the music itself is telling the story with the text, but the music itself tells a lot of the story, even if you don't get the text.
Okay. And what are some of the challenges that have come out of putting on this show?
I mean, a major challenge for me is that we're working on a stage at the Wheeler, which is very small for this size opera. And so it means having to figure out how to stage stuff so that an audience can feel how big the opera is and still know that we're looking at a very small stage. I mean, the opera, I don't know that it was written for that much bigger of a house, but it's a big opera. And suddenly the Wheeler stage, which is very beautiful, is small. You know, if it's done at the Met, you're talking about a proscenium. The stage itself would be about twice as wide. The Wheeler building, the whole building, would fit on the stage of the Metropolitan Opera House. One of the great things about being at the Wheeler is that vocally, it's extremely friendly for younger voices, because it's about 500 seats, and it means that the singers don't have to fight. They don't have to really struggle. vocally. I mean, they have to go over the orchestra, so that can take energy and vocal energy. But the house itself is very friendly acoustically.
What do you love so much about working on operas?
I think it's that it's a collaborative art. For me as a director, you know, I want things certain ways that I envision them. But I also think that it's the working with other people to find how to create something and create an image through drama and through music and visuals that is fun.
What are your like initial thoughts when opening night, when everybody's out on stage? Or like, do you just like stand backstage and you're like, yes, we did this? Or like,
I'm up in the balcony normally watching from the back of the house, and I'm relatively relaxed almost at all productions. And maybe it's just because I've been doing it for a while, but some of it is that I think what happens, and frankly, the mistakes that will happen, because there will be mistakes, it's a human live event. So things are going to happen that are not what were planned. And I think that's one of the exciting things about doing opera, about doing theater, is that it is live. And so when I'm standing there, I'm rooting for everyone to do great and not to make incredibly bad mistakes of some kind, or some kind of error happens. But it's also seeing the way your singers and your orchestra are able to adapt in a moment when something happens that you don't expect. And then I know for me as an audience member, and I think for a lot of audiences here, seeing that moment where something goes slightly wrong and you're aware, gee, that was different than maybe they planned or rehearsed, and then they figure out how to solve it. And I think sometimes those moments, I mean, it's what makes live events so exciting.
How is the Aspen Music Festival and school and the Wheeler together trying to bring in people to kind of break down that barrier?
Well, you know, we have titles. So we always have titles so that people should not, I mean, people who can read will know what's going on. I mean, that's clear. The other thing is that you're watching singers. Many of the roles in operas are for characters who are in their teens and 20s, and that's who we have as singers. So that you feel, I think people going to an opera at the Wheeler feel that they're watching people who would be having these experiences. To me, one of the keys in terms of what we do, what the Opera Center does here, is truly educational in the development of singers. And that's what we've been committed to for a long time, and it's what I think a place like the music festival is so good at educating, at actually giving people experience. It's performance education. It's not studio education. It's performance education. So people get up and do what they hope they're going to do for a profession forever.
Mm-hmm.
And they're given a chance to get up and do it.
That was Edward Berkeley, director of the Aspen Opera Center and La Traviata, as well as the director of undergraduate opera studies at the Juilliard School. Now we turn our attention to Alexandra McKissick, a recent graduate of the Juilliard School himself. He'll be playing Alfredo, Violetta's lover, and says he's excited to have this role in what is his third season with the Aspen Music Festival and school.
In a smaller house, you know, it gives you a little more security. You can make a few mistakes and it will be a little more forgiving. Also, it's just nice because you can kind of feel there's more of an intimate atmosphere. You can feel if the audience is enjoying what you're doing or if they're, you know, crying with you. Whereas in a larger house, it's kind of like staring off into a cave.
Can you tell me a little bit specifically about your character that you'll be playing?
Yeah. Well, Alfredo, as we were saying, he's really young. He's incredibly passionate. He kind of takes off in one direction and goes until he hits a wall. You know, at the beginning, he doesn't really plan anything either. I mean, he is at Violetta's house every day over, like, I think the 3-month period or something that she's sick, just leaving his card, checking in on her. Finally, you know, he meets her, they fall in love, and after, like, I believe a couple weeks of, dating, right, as it were, they move to the country and they decide to be together. Spoiler alert, she leaves him because his father, you know, makes it clear that this relationship isn't going to work out for the rest of the family.
Kind of like Romeo and Juliet-ish.
Yeah, there are family issues, but this is more of a societal thing,
yeah.
You know. She takes off. Yeah, as soon as he finds out that she's gone, he sees an invitation to the party she's at, and he decides he's going to ruin her life because she just broke his heart. So he goes to the party, he ruins her life, realizes that, you know, he's still in love with her, and gets into a duel with the Baron, who she shows up with, flees the country, and finally is told by his father, you know, everything, and comes back immediately to apologize, but it's too late. So basically, as soon as he finds a direction to go in, he goes all the way in that direction, falls on his face, gets up, goes all the way back.
That has to be a fun character to play.
Yeah, it's very fun. You don't really have to check yourself, you know? You just kind of go with the emotion of the moment as far as you can.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, yeah.
So what you've just described sounds like a very dynamic production.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of people that can feel a little polarized by opera. And mm-hmm. I'm sure that you've encountered this conversation or question at some point in your career.
Mm-hmm.
How do you think that this opera is approachable to people that would never go see opera?
Yeah, well, I think the more people I introduce to opera, you know, people just haven't been exposed to it.
Right.
The more you listen to, the more you're just kind of like, yeah, this is really nice. The singing is really good. I haven't heard singing like this in a while. So, I mean, just like the vocal kind of athletics, as it were, are impressive and fun to listen to. And I think something everybody should do before coming to the show is read the story, you know, try to familiarize yourself with what happens, because it is in Italian, you know, and we do have subtitles or surtitles, I guess. But I think it's less about finding out the story as it goes and more about experiencing kind of this portrayal of it.
That was tenor Alexander McKissick, who will be playing one of the Alfredos in the opera La Traviata. The Aspen Music Festival and School's production of La Traviata at the Wheeler Opera House premieres Saturday, July 15th at 7 o'clock p.m. For more information, visit aspenmusicfestival.com. Here's what else is happening this week in the Valley. Running in Repertory with Hairspray is Theater Aspen's production of the play Sex with Strangers, tonight at 7:30 p.m. Also tonight, The Belly Up presents internationally renowned recording artist, film, and TV star Fernando Allende in concert to benefit the local nonprofit English in Action. A reception will begin at 6:30 p.m., with doors for the show opening at 8. And Theater Aspen will preview The World According to Snoopy, July 13th at 7:30 p.m. and July 14th at 3 p.m. before the show's official opening on the 14th at 6 p.m. Friday night, the Aspen Chamber Symphony will perform alongside violinist Sarah Chang in the Benedict Music Tent at 6 p.m. to be conducted by Patrick Summers. Saturday, the Snowmass Free Concert Series continues with the Deaf Camp Benefit, an annual celebration of the Aspen Camp of the Deaf and Hard of Hearing at 2 p.m. in Snowmass Village. Showings of Theater Aspen's production of the musical Hairspray will continue in the Hearst Theater at 3 p.m. and 8 p.m. on Saturday. And Saturday night in Carbondale, Thunder River Theater Company's Consensual Improv Troupe returns to the Black Box at 8 p.m. That's all that's curated this week. For more on arts and culture, tune into Morning Edition throughout the week from 6 to 9 a.m., or you can visit us online at aspenpublicradio.org, where all episodes of this show live. I would not have been able to get this week's show produced on time without help from Kristen Kay. It was edited by Carolyn Zachariasen. Greg Laut and Jason Patton of Boulder wrote the show's theme tune, Omnicord Entrance. Special thanks to the Stefan Edlis and Gail Neeson Foundation, which aims to support art, community, and outreach. Follow Curated APR on Facebook for news and updates on Arts in the Valley. I'm Claire Woodcock at the Edlis Neeson Arts and Culture Desk. Curated is a production of Aspen Public Radio News.